this person done that, and you know that I didn't tell her that one of them she remembered had passed away, I didn't tell her that. No point. And so that was quite interesting. So from the age of 2 until the age of 9, I was under, no, that's not right, the age of 10, sorry. And in fact, there is one, I did actually go once more after my 10th birthday to the Queen Mary's up at Roehampton. I mean, that became quite a regular trip. And then I subsequently discovered by sheer chance that the what was known as the lovely name, the Children's Prosthetic Unit, lovely name, and I discovered it. Yes, lovely, isn't it? Charming. Is now the Leon Guinness Unit, which I only found out, chance is a wonderful thing, a physio I was working with when I was teaching said, oh, I trained at the Leon Guinness. I said, the where? So that was lovely. And she wondered why I then started to get a bit moist around the eyes. I said, I'm terribly sorry. I said, that genius gave me what I've got. Because he then started sort of humming and hawing and saying, right, what should we do? Well, he started on my legs. Now, I think although the idea, because they were always obsessed with walking, it was an obsession, that you were going to walk. What we learned, and when is my mother and I, was that hands are more important than feet. Arms are more important. Because looking at the ones who lost either full sets of arms or legs, the ones who were more successful were the ones who had the arms, because you can push a chair. Now, I'm sorry, that sounds very crude, mm-hmm. but we learned that. Mm-hmm. And of course, I saw all the gas-filled cylinders and all the, you know, I mean, I've got very strong memories of all of those. I was very fortunate. None of that had to come my way. I was very lucky. Now, when I was 2, they did try me in. I had boots. They did try me. I mean, why on earth anyone could walk with legs bowed like that? I don't know. But anyway, they said, well, if you try, you'd run it. So, you know, and there is a horrendous photograph of me trying, which kind of shows how very uncomfortable and painful it was. Now, the surgery started, the main bulk of my surgery happened between 2 and 4, and I spent the summer of 1964 plastered, as it were. That sounds good, doesn't it? I went to uni very early.
Especially at the age of 2.
Exactly, yes, very good. I was an early starter. And basically, what I've got... Now, I don't actually... I mean, this hip was displaced. And I know that they put that right, and I have a scar there, and that's when they put that hip straight, because that was why it was all round there, because it was displaced. This is the bit that children always love. When I taught, they always love this. I always say, I've only got one knee, which is true, that's this one. But I have a kneecap on this leg, but it's round the back. Right?
Trying to picture that.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And if it bent, I'd be like a flamingo. Children love that concept. They love that. Yeah. But of course, they made that rigid. And there is a lot of scar, a massive scar that's caused a lot of problems actually in there, because that was, you know, they had to sort of basically stick that leg together, that's how I'd put it, and then they had to make the ankle more rigid because it wasn't. This leg, they had to make the ankle rigid, and also there's a scar down there because they had to sort of put that knee in to as good as Nick as they could, but it was always an issue. Now my pelvis, instead of being like that, is like that.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So basically, not only is it, for the benefit of the tape, what I'm saying is I'm putting my hands up to show that not only is it at an angle, it's a skewed angle. Mm. Right? So once they'd done the surgery when I was 4, there were then photographs of me when I was going to school at 5. And we were trying boots again. And it was a very unstable platform to walk from. I mean, at this point, we're not talking about any extra length. I mean, I had a built-up boot because the right leg is shorter than the left. But I was at my height in boots, yeah?
So they weren't prosthetic legs?
No, not yet. That's why I'm being very careful how I put this. Yeah. And the major problem was this knee, because it was bent. Now, if you look, it's bent. It's flexed.
Yes.
Yeah? Yeah. Okay? Oh, yeah. Sorry.
It's in a sort of a permanent bent shape.
Yeah, a bent shape. Well, I do not know what Leon Guinness had in mind, obviously. I think he was further ahead than some, and I suspect in his head he may well have thought I wasn't going to walk because I wasn't, because of the hips, and they were learning that hips and pelvis, if you haven't got hips and pelvis that work, whatever you do, it ain't going to work, chaps. Mm. They tried me on the classic rocker feet and I just couldn't do it. I know I'm relatively heavyweight now, although I've lost over half a stone recently, I'm working very hard. But then I was actually quite a light child. Mm. There wasn't much of me. Mm. And even then I still couldn't do it. So they gave up on that. Now, Leon Gillis, I didn't mean to be rude, died in 67. And now I'm going to stop using names now, the doctors, because otherwise I could be done for slander. Mm-hmm. I was then put under the care of another surgeon. And what we would now probably say a paediatrician, but we didn't use that word then because we hadn't borrowed it from America. Mm. A child physician, whatever. And there, they shared an obsession with walking. And in 1968, they started to plan and plot, and there is no other word for this, I'm afraid, what would be the best way forward. And they decided that what needed to go was this foot. And they also decided that further surgery was needed on this knee, which was entirely experimental. There is no question in my mind that it was entirely experimental. I'm sorry, but we're almost talking Mengele here. And in 1969, in the February, I was operated on to straighten that knee. All I'm going to say is it took 4 months for it to revert back to the normal position. That is all I'm going to say. I needn't say any more, need I? It's not a nice thought, and it wasn't.
Do you have actual memories of this happening?
Yes,
to
I
you
do.
At the time?
I don't have any memories of what happened with the early surgery. I have no memory of that at all. I do have vague memories of the... Leon Gillis, I remember. I remember him. And that, for me, is quite extraordinary. I'm not good on childhood memories. Anyone will tell you that. I'm not good. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. But I do remember him. I do remember the Sister Mears.
I was going to ask you if you
remember Sister Mears.
Everybody raves about Sister
My mother and she got on very well. And my Sister Mears once said to my mother, made her a great compliment, actually, which I think was a very fair compliment, because as you probably know by then, sadly, a lot of the more disabled children, the little my children, their parents were no longer able to cope. And a lot of them were in care, going to Chailey Heritage. I'm not calling that going to care. I know that was a school, but they were not having any more, much more contact, is what I mean. Yes. And Sister Mears once said to my mother, if you sat all the children in a row and asked which one was the one still at home, you'd pick Liz straight out. And I think that was true. Mm. So, I mean, whatever else I've said, you know, I was very grateful. And I am. Grateful is an awful word, but it'll do. There was never any question that my mother, you know, she wasn't going to have that. And then they put me up, although the knee hadn't worked, onto prosthetic legs.
Did they take the foot?
No. Because, there we are, proof, wiggle away.
So glad you said that.
Yeah. My mother, and this is a true story, and this is why I've never mentioned any doctors' names, I'm being very careful, was in the canteen at the hospital. And can you imagine what would happen now if this had happened? It doesn't, you know. And there was a discussion going on the other side of a pillar between the doctor and the surgeon. Well, then there's the Lash case, a word to that effect. Oh, that mother. Oh dear, what are we going to do? If we could just get that child's left foot off, then we can do what we like. She heard them say that. You could say there's no proof. I totally believe that's what she said. And she came back. She didn't tell me. What she did, being my mother, was to get on to the aunt who I said it used to be a nurse, and said, what do I do? do you think this is, you know, do you believe that, oh yes, she said calmly, I do. Because she was very totally straight, was my aunt, was Anne, totally straight. Yes, dear, I totally believe. But she said, don't take her away immediately. You don't know what else good might. But she said, just whenever that foot, just keep, you know, keep her. So my mother then kept a very close watching brief. And she said to me, when I was a lot older, she said, I started then to listen so much more to you, what you wanted. Because she said, you were bright and you knew. Well, I still hadn't got a wheelchair by this point.
So how did you get, were you being carried?
I was being carried, or there was an adaptive pushchair. Yeah. My mother went to the local secondary school and they built me my first wheelchair. One slight thing they forgot, they were brakes. Bit of a problem, but never mind. That's true. So my mother then started pushing, for pardon the pun, saying, I want a wheelchair. She needs a wheelchair. Did you get? And the first one they provided was so heavy she couldn't lift it in and out the boot of the car. Mm-hmm. Basically. But anyway. When I was, they put me up, I was second to what we would now say year five. I have to think this, I have to do the maths. And they said, they put me up onto the prosthetic legs so I would have been the right height for my age, which apparently they can work out to do with your vertebrae and various other things. And I would have been very tall. And so I shot up and I was taller than everyone else in my class. I don't think that was very clever myself, apart from anything else. And I spent 6 months, there or thereabouts, not walking on prosthetic legs.
So you had the legs on, but you sat in...
I hated it. I tried.
Yes.
But I mean, I was, you know, they tried on shorter ones and they said, oh yes, that's all right. And they put me on, I thought, I'm not. So in the end, when we went up to the, I can remember doing this, I was then, yeah, I was about 10 and a half. And I said, am I ever going to be able to walk without needing a wheelchair? Am I ever going to walk very far? Well, yeah, we ought to. I said, no, I want an answer. And of course the answer was, I said, right, okay, fine. I don't want to bother. I said, I want a life. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be. By that time, I was starting to get an interest in the theatre. I was starting to, you know, that was my passion. When I was 10, I was precocious enough to say that I was going to be the first Shakespearean actress in a wheelchair. Ugh, but there you go.
It's
a bit sad, isn't it? And I was also finding another great theatrical passion of my life, which was dance, which may sound slightly odd, but it was an absolute, you know, thing of mine, still is. So I didn't want, you know, I wanted to live. And my mother said, are you sure? And so we went, so I said, you're absolutely sure about this? I said, yeah. And so they all threw up their hands in horror, but she withdrew me from treatment from Roehampton, transferred me down here and said to the GP, can we get, yes? I mean, nowadays we'd know, but you know, we didn't then. Now, one thing which when we came to look through all my notes, we did go back the following year in the August before I went to secondary school. And I have no recollection of that whatsoever. I remember all the stopping, but I think they must have said, you know, come back. And I went back in the Barrett chair I had then, coping fine and about to go to secondary school. And I think they realised I was a closed book and I wasn't going to be any, you know. And that is when I saw somebody who'd been a houseman to Leon Gillis and who actually wrote on my notes that I was thalidomide. And when I subsequently saw Dr. Newman, he said he was also a houseman of his, and he said he's done that on purpose, hoping that this was going to happen at a later date. He said, that's intentional.
So I wonder, I mean,
so
it will be...
He's extraordinary.
Yes, yeah. So, but
and
you,
complex.
You know that your mum would have probably had conversations with the doctors...
I assume so.
...about you being thalidomide.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, because, I mean, Martin Johnson from the Thalidomide Trust said to me, did she talk to Leon Gillis about it? I said, the only thing I know about is that what she told me that Leon Gillis said to her.
Mm.
I said, I don't know anything else. I said, I don't think much was said. I said, I think my mother blinded herself. It's the only word I can use. She's not thalidomide.
Mm.
And like you said, the lie becomes easier and you build it up over the years.
Yes.
And it becomes your truth.
Do you think,
and it's become my truth.
Yes, yeah, no, okay, it makes total sense. But do you think some of the reason why she didn't tell you would have been because of that maternal guilt that so
yes.
many mothers
Oh, I would imagine
they
so.
Swallowed the tablets.
And I mean, I think she,
this,
yes.
But.
I mean, also bearing in mind, I mean, the guilt must have been almost, you know, compounded by what was going on in her own life. And I mean, the fact that again, my grandmother was a lapsed and then went back Catholic, and so she knew how to do guilt, and she was very good at passing that on to my mother, and so she was always guilty about everything anyway. So if you compound that, yes, I totally agree.
I mean, you can understand where she came from,
sort of,
can't
yes,
you?
Yes. I actually had a year's worth of counselling after this all occurred, because I just couldn't handle it at all. And I couldn't handle what it had done to my relationship with my mother. That was what I couldn't handle. So yes, I'm in a place now, that sounds like a bad book, but yes.
Was it the fact that the thing that you couldn't handle, was that
the fact that she lied
that was your life?
I mean, two things. The fact that she lied, because I have a thing about truth, if you like, and also the fact that she had been unable to see how much it would have been so useful, purely on a practical level. I don't mean a greed level, but because financially we weren't that well off for various reasons, because we weren't, it would have been so useful and it would have made such a difference. So it was, and I thought, you know, you didn't, why could you not see? And I did actually say that to her. And she hadn't, and I said, you must have known, it was everywhere in the papers. And I said, surely people were saying things to you. And she did actually say yes. And I mean, I spoke subsequently to two of her closest friends, and on the advice of the counsellor, actually, after my mother had died. And they both said, well, yes, we said it. We said it. And she wouldn't budge.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
So that was what I had problems with. It's very strange. But I think it was also there was also the fact that she was, her life was my life. And I think she was so frightened that would have given me more freedom in a way, I think. I don't think she knew she thought that. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that was a sort of, so it's very, it's ever so complicated.
So you, after you'd been born, you moved in with your grandparents.
Yes.
And then was that the point where you think your mother got, in your words, became quite obsessed with you and built her life around
yes.
you from
yes.
then on?
Yes, basically. Yes. Yes, she did. Yes. She taught part-time at what is now Sussex Downs College and went through various names. She taught English. And that was really, I mean, it was a good job she did, because that was her only other outlet, really. And few and close friends. She's not opposite to me, really. She wasn't a social being at all. And I mean, she had quite severe mental health issues of her own, in fact.
Would you describe yourself as having had a good relationship with her,
yes.
though, at
yes.
the time? A close
oh, yes.
bond?
Oh, yes. Very much so. I mean, it got a little difficult when I got older, but yes. Oh, yes. Very much so. And I mean, it was very much a supportive thing, because my grandmother subsequently got vascular dementia, and that got very difficult, as these things do. And nobody talked about it the way they do now. Thank goodness they do. And so it's, you know, it was all very, I mean, she had a very difficult life, and I'd be the first to put my hand up to that, but it needn't have been quite as difficult either. But,
yes,
hey-ho.
I suppose what's hard to square up is the fact that she was being given a lot of advice from other people.
And people she trusted, too.
Somehow in her mind she was making
that. Yeah. As I said, I can now accept it, thanks
yes.
to the counsellor that I went to, who was very good, but it took a long time. It wasn't a 5-minute job.
I can imagine.
Oh, well, it's one of the things that the government's health grant helped to pay for was the counselling, which is a bit ironic when you think about it. I had to have a health grant to help me accept the health grant, in a sense, you could say.
Okay, a lot of these questions you've naturally...
I thought I probably would have done.
Yeah, you've naturally covered a lot of those. And questions like, at what age did you know your impairment was caused by thalidomide? Well,
49!
I think that's got to be a first for me. And you've talked about when you got your compensation through. So your parents wouldn't have attended any events organised
no.
by the Thalidomide Society?
No. No. My mother knew of their existence. I do know that, but no, no.
And did you ever encounter any other thalidomide children, say at school or no.
around? Well, in a way, not at school directly. I went to school with Alice Yendel. She was in my year. And, of course, her brother was Tom.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I didn't know, she wasn't a friend, a close friend, but I knew her. And I knew Tom. And I subsequently got to know his parents. And Tom, and apparently they had said to Tom, well, she must be. Why does she never turn up at anything? What's her surname, sort of thing? Not inquisitively, but just puzzled. And that was, I mean, apart from the ones I knew at hospital, Christopher and Tina and Mike. You see, I remember the names. And we watched with great interest on Giant's Shoulders and all that sort of thing. So, because we did know, we knew Terry when he was Andy.
Yes.
So, you know, and my mother remembered him very much. Running, shinning up the curtains in the room and having to be, and my mother lifting him down. That's, you know, that's true. That's what she remembered. And I mean, she could talk about that with me and she could talk about those times without any problem at all, because she was talking about them as people, not about thalidomide children. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course, yeah. So she's not having to talk about something she's avoiding.
No, that's right. That's right.
And do you have any other, yourself, do you have any anecdotes and memories of that time at Roehampton?
Not really. No. I don't... I do remember one thing, and I remember who said it to me, and I was then about 5, I suppose. And one of the girls I'd got friendly with, definitely, she was one of the ones, unfortunately, whose impairment affected all 4 limbs. And she said to me, you know your mother, you're still living, you live at home and your mother comes to see you. And she said, you do know, don't you, that one day she won't come back for you. And she wasn't being unkind at all. She was about 6 months older than I was. She was preparing me. And I was so sure of my mother, I told her. And I remember doing that. And I remember saying to her, isn't that awful? That's what she thinks. Because I knew she wouldn't do it. So I was grounded and sure. I knew that wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. But I can remember being... But I was... It sounds terribly precocious, but I was so sure of my own ground... But I understood why she'd said it. I wasn't angry.
No.
I mean, a lot of children would have been.
Experience, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And I just thought, I thought it was very, I said to Mum, I said, it was nice of her to say it, though, wasn't it? She was trying to be helpful. Now, I remember funny things overnight, some of the other children. And I remember, because that was the first time I came across children with spina bifida. And the beginnings of understanding, because one mother had 2 children with spina bifida. And then she got pregnant again. And I can remember hazily, that was the beginning of my first awakening, and I said to my mother, I said, does she know that she might have? I said, surely if she's had 2, I mean, even though I was only 8 or 9, it seemed, I was a bit older then, but it seemed to me logical. And she said, I don't know. And I said, that doesn't make sense. And I can remember, isn't it funny how you remember that? And it was almost the beginning of my own awakening. And I remember my mother being angry with the woman who said that she wanted a normal child to prove her own womanhood. And I remember my mother really laying into her and saying, it's not about you, it's about the children. I mean, my mother was a very, very quiet woman. But if you touched a raw nerve, you knew.
Probably in defence of you.
I think, absolutely. She used to say a tiger's got out. Mm. So, but I don't... I remember very clearly having had the operation on my knee, and I remember when they were looking at the wounds, and I remember them, and I remember my knee being the leg being straight, and it was almost as long as the left one then. And I remember thinking to myself, it's not going to stay like that. I'm sure it isn't. It doesn't, whatever they've done. But I never actually knew what they did. I never knew what they did. And I can remember as a child thinking, I wish they'd tell me what they're doing. That I do remember. Mm. Not voicing it, because children are funny.
They are.
The tremendous relief. And also, I've got, I suppose, I'm a great, what's the word, go through a door and shut it behind me. I didn't need to think about it. Not because I hated it, because that was over.
I think that's probably a very good way to be.
My mother said it was like my father. She couldn't, that I'd inherited it. She was convinced of it. Whether that's genetic, I don't know. But. So, I mean, I have very few, I said to you, I've got very few childhood, never mind about the hospital, I've got very few childhood memories. I remember a lot about when we went to Canada in 1965, I remember a lot about that. And I remember various things during my life that tend to be about particular individuals and animals, which would make your daughter smile, I'm sure. But actual memory, no. If you said to me, do you remember certain things at school? I'd probably say no. I know they happened, but remember them? No. Mm-hmm. Not the same thing.
That's interesting. So school. You said your mum did all the right things.
Yes.
In terms of getting you into a mainstream school, not a special school.
Which what she did was to, again, I know the person's passed away now, but her then boss, a married man with whom she was having an affair. She had an affair, yes. Had an affair for over 20 years. I think he kept her sane, to be honest. She said it went on for so long it was almost, almost acceptable. She knew he knew a lot about the rules and regulations. And she said, right, what's the situation? So he went away and found out. He was a great left winger, which is very useful. A strong South Wales left wing type, very useful. I think it helped her to understand my political views when I got older. And he discovered at the time that if a school would accept a child, the local authority couldn't say no. Now, that's the law back in 1965. It's not the law now, but it was then. So my mother briskly went down to our local primary school and explained. And they said, well, bring her down, let's have a look. Yeah, we can manage. And I went into Miss Law's class. And I went to Pevensey and West Ham Primary, Church of England Primary School. I had somebody to help take me to the loo because this is way ahead of days of accessible toilets, obviously. I mean, it's a long time ago. Yes. And those two people actually ended up being people I still know, one of whom is still living in West Ham Village, and I still see at things like the Women's Institute and stuff like that because I've still got connections with West Ham. And then when I was 9, the local authority started nosing around and thinking to themselves, we've got quite a bright one here. And so they sent an educational psychologist along to the school to test me, not telling my mother. And I was duly tested. And I subsequently sorted out, because of my knowledge of schools, that they wrote to my mother and said I'd been offered a place at Trelaw. I mean, she didn't. I had to work out what the school was because she couldn't remember. I worked this one out. My mother went just a little bit in off the deep end, charging into the then head teacher, who I almost felt sorry for. Nice man, but a little not quite, and couldn't stand up to my mother in that sort of mood. First of all, why hadn't you told me she'd been in and tested? She's not going away to a special school. Off she went. Now, this is in the days of 11 plus. And because Eastbourne, in its strange way, was a unitary authority, the schools were not, we're not talking about Eastbourne schools, they're out of it. It was, if you passed your 11 plus, you went to Bexhill Grammar School from West Ham. If you didn't, you went to Willingdon Secondary School. And this is the secondary modern. This is, of course, long before the days of, you know, choice and whatever. Now, my mother duly contacted Bexhill Grammar School, which had only just become co-educational, because that would have been another problem, because my mother was determined I was going to a co-educational school. Mainly because a lot of my friends were boys, because I didn't really like girls. But I didn't like girly things. I wasn't a girl. Well, I mean, I was, but I wasn't into girl things. And she went along to see the then deputy head, who'd been the head of the girls' school, a woman who only passed away about 3 years ago, with a wonderful name of Miss Cockshoot. And an amazing lady who interviewed me and said, bring her along to see me. And I also met the then head. And remarkable. And now, and they said, well, it won't be easy, but yes, of course, if you pass 11 plus, she'll come here. Well, Willingdon Secondary School was definitely not accessible. Steps and stairs everywhere. And I've subsequently been there and it's not. But my mother had taught there, so she knew the head, whose name escapes me. But she went to see him, and he said, well, having met me, he said, well,